Welcome, everybody, to the Untold History Channel. My name is Ron Partain, and it is, what is today? July 10th. Flying by again. I mean, every time I look at it, it feels like it's like, I don't know, every time I look at the calendar, it feels like it, like a week has passed. This is insane. So, buddy, what you doing? One of my boys is here with me. I see here. You want to say hi? So that's Remington, and he's actually a really good cat. So now I'm going to go over. I don't think I'm going to get to both of these. I may, depends on how long it goes. Questions, etc. There is an article that I'm going to read from Perloff, James Perloff. That's actually the title of the video. But then there's a second part that I found. And it was a story that was written in, it was published April 2nd of 2022. And it says, the title is Four Communist Escapees Warn America is Becoming an Authoritarian Nation. So it kind of goes along with the theme that Russia and America have kind of like swapped places. And, you know, I remember, I can't remember the guy's name. I think it was like Casey or something. In fact, let me look this up. Is it right? Is that Michael Casey? I think that may be right. Michael Casey. Let's see. I'm trying to find when this was, because I want to say it was like done. It was said like back in like the 30s, 1930s or 40s. And I'm having a difficult time remembering, but I think it was like the guy's name was Casey, but anyway, it just dawned on me to talk about it right now. Whatever. If I could find it, maybe I'll play it at a later point. But the point of the matter is that Russia and the United States did or have basically changed. They've swapped spots here. So, let's dive in to the article. He hasn't written a lot here. It's going to be some video intensive, like shorter videos. And then there's one that's about a 20 minute long video. And then in the first video, when I play it, there's going to be a reference to an article, and I'm going to pull that article up and read it. So, or read the parts that are highlighted anyway. So with that said, let's dive right in here. All right. So let's see here. Let's add. Okay. So this is, says the unthinkable has finally happened. Russia and America have traded places. I mean, it's a little bit bigger. Okay. Nope. This article is being published during the final month of Barack Obama's administration. The impact of a Trump presidency remains to be seen. In 1985, I began my journalistic career writing for The New American magazine. The New American, I think, is a John Birch Society magazine. House organ of the John Birch Society. I am not a spokesperson for either entity, so my remarks here are my own. The magazine was and still is a defender of the United States Constitution, an opponent of globalism, and a critic of the Federal Reserve and Council on Foreign Relations. In the pre-internet era, it was one of those few journals to use the word conspiracy in connection with the U.S. government. If anyone doubts this, check the 1983 clip of Georgia Congressman Lawrence McDonald, who had recently become the John Birch Society chairman. And he fends off conspiracy ridicule from Tom Braden, who's a CIA CFR on Crossfire, co-hosted by Pat Buchanan. So this is going to be a little bit of a treat, I think, because I don't know if any of you guys have ever seen this. Let's see. I don't know if any of you guys have ever seen this, but get a load of this.
Very well. No, I don't think so.
Yeah, I'm a
Let me just tell you what Newsweek says.
The John Birch Society considers communism only one arm, of a national, of a master socialist American insiders plotting to establish world government.
Now, it also says, and here's Director John McManus,
Director John
Public Relations Director,
Public Relations Director,
saying that former Secretary of State Alexander
Alexander
and CIA Director William Casey are two of these master conspirators who are plotting to establish world government. Now, what do you say? You know, that kind of silly, asinine statement is what makes make people laugh at the John Birch Society.
Well, Tom, I'm sure being a long-standing member of the Rockefeller apparatus, and as a member of the Council on Foreign Relations of long-standing, you're fully aware that there is an elitist core in this country that has seen value in subsidizing communism, of protecting communism.
It has?
Sure.
You're accusing me of subsidizing communism?
No, I'm saying
because
that
because I
is,
happen to belong
no,
to a
no, to there a is an elite
policy
core.
Study
now,
group?
That, no, wait a minute. There is an elite core in this country that has dominated American society.
Well, I'm not one of them.
Trilateral commission.
A trilateral commission. Council on Foreign Relations.
State Department, I suppose.
Well, let's face it, they've dominated the State Department for 40 years, and pretty much openly.
All right,
so.
But what are they trying to do?
Well, their objective is to try to bring about a gradual transition in our society, a dissolving of sovereignty, and a moving steadily to the left on the political spectrum.
Well, who are
the
they?
Belief, the elitist groups that I mentioned, particularly key individuals and policymakers in the Council on Foreign Relations.
Is the International Monetary Fund part of this?
Well, I would say the International Monetary Fund has certainly been set up for the purpose of facilitating that transfer of sovereignty and transfer of wealth on the road.
All right, we elected Mr. Conservative.
Let me just finish the point, because otherwise we're going to have a lot of unanswered questions, that you are looking at a group that has worked to bring about the dissolution of national sovereignties on the road to world government. And certainly you're familiar with the local professor, Carol Quigley, who has been part of your club, in which he admitted all this. And he said in his book, Tragedy and Hope, the only thing I disagree is that we've worked to keep it a secret. And you see Arthur Schlesinger Jr. writing way back in 1947, says, yes, this is the hidden policy of America. But we can't tell the American public because they're too unsophisticated to see the value.
What is the instrumentality of world government? What is the instrumentality?
All the things you say about Arthur Schlesinger, that's the silliest statement I ever heard. He never made anything like that.
Well, let me suggest that you read the May-June issue of the Partisan Review of 1947, Tom, and you can read it for yourself. It's called
Schlesinger
Manifesto. Arthur
Schlesinger said there was a conspiracy.
Oh.
A conspiracy to promote communism?
Oh, no, he didn't use the word conspiracy. He said the objective was to bring
about...
Well, let me finish. I'll tell you. He said that the objective, the secret policy, which we can't tell the American public because they're not sophisticated enough to see the value, is that through a steady result of erosion of new deals, we bring the American society steadily to the left.
All right.
And through a sound concept of benign containment, we merge into the vital center of the socialist left. Those are his words, not mine.
You think John Kennedy was a member of that conspiracy?
No, let me ask you this. The world federalist movement in the post-war era contained a lot of people who eventually broke with it, and a lot of people thought the UN, in the post-war era, looked toward world government.
Sure.
Indeed, they did, up until 48, 49. But a lot of them said, look, we were utopian. That's over and done with. We can't move. And a lot of them came in Kennedy's government. Schlesinger was in there when they were fighting in Vietnam, launched the effort in Vietnam. Schlesinger was behind the Bay of Pigs. In other words, look, isn't there some move that occurred in the post-war era that now has been dissipated because nobody believes in the utopian ideal of world government anymore?
Well, I think there are those that realize that moving straight from a prototype of the United Nations into world government perhaps is tactically impossible. But phasing out increasingly national sovereignty into regional government and phasing out sovereignties into international treaties in multiple areas could be a route.
The whole movement toward, quote, interdependence.
Yes.
NATO is part of the conspiracy?
Well, there are certainly elements in NATO. There are people in NATO who are very strongly dedicated to the defense of the West. But at the same time, you find in NATO a steady dissolution. You find a growing weakness as NATO policy dominated by State Department policies that has not worked.
Well, it's a regional grouping, and I think, therefore, it may be suspect by the John Birch Society.
We're talking with Congressman Larry McDonnell, who has recently been elevated, I guess, to chairmanship of the John Birch Society, succeeding Robert Welch. We'll be back in a minute.
All right. Okay, so that was... That was Robert Welch now, Larry McDonald, who took over for Robert Welch of the John Birch Society. Now, a lot of people may not realize this, but that gentleman was on Korean Airlines flight 007 that was shot down over the Kamchatka Peninsula by Russian fighters later that year. So he wasn't in there very long. Now, I don't know. Was that plane targeted? I don't know. But if you look at if you look here, it says you know, he talks about Dr. McDonald. Of course, was lost later that year in the still controversial Soviet shootdown of Korean Airlines flight 007. So now he mentioned something in there about the Schlesinger report. All right. And this is kind of what I wanted to get into right here, is the Schlesinger report. And I'm not going to read it all, but this is Schlesinger. This was what he's talking about, the May-June issue of the Congressional Record. And it's sub-called the Schlesinger Manifesto. So Schlesinger predicts the future of socialism. This is Tuesday, September 26th of 1961. Okay. Is that what he said? I thought he said it was the 47th, 48th. Okay, maybe here it is. Maybe they're referring to that in here. I came across an interesting periodical called The Partisan Review, which contained a remarkable article in the issue dated May-June 1947. The Partisan Review, while available to all readers, is actually read only by professional and intellectual socialists of all shades, from the out-and-out pro-communist to the Fabian Keynesian socialist. The remarkable article I spoke of, the lead article in the issue of the Partisan Review dated May-June 1947, was written by Arthur Schlesinger Jr., former professor of history at Harvard, and now high in the councils of the Kennedy administration. It is a blueprint of the plan for turning the people of the United States over to a monolithic socialist, fascist, Marxist type of tyranny. It was written in 1947. I urge everyone to read it. You will see how far this country has advanced. And see here. Here's the full text of the article. And I'm not going to read it all just because I'm just not going to. The socialist state is thus worse than the capitalist state because it is more inclusive in its own coverage and more unlimited in its power. Organization corrupts. Total organization corrupts totally. And this is in the United States. An industrialist who turned a machine gun on a picket line would be disowned by the rest of the business community. In Britain, he would be sent to an insane asylum. Let's see. I don't know. I kind of wonder if I should read this whole thing. I'll just read the highlights, and then if it's compelling, then I'll come back and read it all. There seems no inherent obstacle to the gradual advance of socialism in the United States through a series of new deals. The next depression will certainly mean a vast expansion in government ownership and control. The private owners will not only acquiesce in this in characteristic capitalistic panic, they will demand it. And that's, I kind of feel like this right here is what we're about to see right now. The recipe for retaining liberty is not rationalization, but muddling through a secret long known to the British, who, as D.W. Brogan has put it, change anything except the appearance of things. Socialism then appears quite practicable within this frame. The active agents in effecting the transition will probably be not the working class, but some combination of lawyers, businessmen, and labor managers, politicians, and intellectuals in the manner of the first New Deal or of the labor government in Britain. They have constituted a plutocracy, not an aristocracy. They have never been, in the political sense, an effective governing class. A plutocracy is trained to think in terms of business dealings and not of war, in terms of security and not of honor, in terms of class and not of nation. With their power dependent upon continued convertibility of pieces of paper, they dread anything which might upset the fragile conventions of economic society. Theodore Roosevelt once observed, even a Democrat like myself must admit this, but there is absolutely nothing to be said for government by a plutocracy, for government by men very powerful in certain lines and gifted with the money touch, but with ideals which in their essence are merely those of so many glorified pawnbrokers. Sorry, guys, this is hard on my eyes. In America, when the chips were down, the businesses have always been bailed out by the radical democracy, often under aristocratic leadership with the Jeffersons, Jackson, Lincolns, Wilsons, Roosevelts. I don't know where he's getting Jefferson and Jacksons, but definitely Lincoln, Wilson, and Roosevelt. I don't think Jefferson and Jackson were involved in that kind of stuff, but I could be wrong. The rise of big business, the development of mass protection and mass organization have slowly taken the guts out of the idea of prosperity. The spread of rationalism has set in motion a skepticism which holds no social authority sacred. Capitalism at once has strengthened the economic centralization and loosened the moral bonds of society, the result of a profound instability which invites collectivism as a means of restoring social discipline. That doyen of American capitalists, Joseph P. Kennedy, recently argued that the United States should not seek to resist the spread of communism. Indeed, it should permit communism to have its trial outside the Soviet Union if that shall be the fate or will of certain peoples. In most of these countries, a few years will demonstrate the inability of communism to achieve its promise. I was waiting for that. I'm surprised I didn't highlight that. While through this period, the disillusioned experimenters will be observing the benefits of the American way of life, and most of them will seek to emulate it. And I tend to agree with that. If we actually went back to the principles of our founding, I think that that's absolutely the case. People would want to be like us instead of, us trying to bring democracy to the rest of the world. They would try to emulate our republic. In fact, one country I know of basically already did, and that's Switzerland. We are confronted today with the picture of the New Dealers trying to launch a positive foreign policy over vigorous protests of the business groups which that policy will protect, fearing change, fearing swift action, because it might pretend change, lacking confidence and resolution. Subject to spasms of panic and hysteria, the American business community is too irresponsible to work steadily for the national interests or even for the narrow or its narrow class interests. Anyway, you guys get the point there. This was a document that was written in 1947, and clearly they were outlining, you know, what they wanted to do and how they wanted to, you know, make the United States socialist. Again, right on the heels of World War II, which is kind of what Mike has been saying all along, that the World War II was essentially the laying the foundation for creating world government. So, let's see. Indeed, both the Birch Society and the magazine were perhaps best known as opponents of communism. During the Cold War, the Soviet Union and communism were correctly viewed as police state institutions birthed with the Bolshevik Revolution. They were the builders of gulags and the Berlin Wall, suppressors of freedom of speech and religion, the architects of Ukraine's Holodomor, crushers of the 1956 Hungarian Revolt, even the Black Book of Communism, published by the very liberal Harvard University Press, put the number of people murdered by the communists at about 100 million worldwide, although other sources put it much higher. And we perceived our America, with its Bill of Rights and middle-class prosperity, as the world's beacon of freedom. And that is true. Look at what they were doing. Anywhere there was a communist regime, they had to put walls up to keep people in. This is an iconic photo from 1961. Conrad Schumann, a 19-year-old East German soldier, jumps over barbed wire to freedom in the West. Ah, he was saying, I'm out of here. Deuces. When Mikhail Gorbachev came to power in 1985 and subsequently introduced Glasnost, we at the magazine viewed it with due skepticism. To us, it was just another Soviet ruse, temporary liberalization intended to deceive the West into disarming. Indeed, that was precisely the view which KGB defector Anatoly Galitzin had expressed in his 1984 book, New Lies for Old, which foretold communism's future with astonishing accuracy, everything from the rise of Gorbachev like leader to the dismantling of the Berlin Wall. I remember this book as it really caused me a lot of problems just internally. I was very unsettled. Giving further credence to the Galitzin's work, it's being totally disregarded by mainstream media, although his defection had inspired the opening scenes of Alfred Hitchcock's 1969 movie, Topaz. I'm talking about Galitzin. Galitzin predicted that, in the end, communism would vigorously return and that all totalitarianism features familiar with the early stages of the Soviet Revolution and the post-war Stalinist years in Eastern Europe might be expected to reappear. For a long time, I awaited that rebirth of Russian communism. I initially viewed Vladimir Putin with strong suspicion. The persistent question on my mind has been, is he the real deal? Many of us in alternative media have become cynical to the point of believing that no major world leader can ever emerge without being a lackey for the Rothschild-run New World Order. And I get that 100%. I think everybody's skeptical, 100%. Instead, a very different scenario has unfolded. It is the United States that is descending into communism via creeping socialism, the police state via the Patriot Act, NSA spying, etc., and anti-Christianity, as nativity scenes are prohibited at Christmas, gay marriage and transgenderism carry the force of the law, and the entertainment industry has gone full Lucifer. And this is the Baphomet, and then this is Madonna. Dressed like a Baphomet. And then I think this was a TV show. I don't remember. Was it Fox? Yeah. Lucifer. Over 5 years ago, the popular YouTuber Brother Nathaniel, a Jewish convert to Orthodox Christianity, summarized the distinctions between Obama and Putin and the different paths to their nations were taking. Now, this link is broken, but I did find it. And let me go ahead and play it here. I think it's short. It's only about a minute and a half.
Do you even know how much your cell phone?
Do you even know how much your cell phone?
You'll be surprised to know that the World Health Organization has cost organization.
Okay, so that wasn't it actually. When I downloaded it, it actually downloaded the commercial. Crazy. I uploaded the wrong video. Here we go. It's coming. Brother Nathaniel's kind of a, he's an old quirky dude, but he's interesting. He's definitely quirky. Well, while the video is processing, I'm going to go ahead and read a little bit further here. Unlike so many U.S. officials who, oh, there we go. It's up. Right. So it's a little bit longer. It's about 5 minutes, but I think it'll be worth it.
Great leaders attract great people.
Great leaders attract great
at the close of the 18th century.
As we begin the 21st
century, two leaders in the public eye, Vladimir Putin, Prime Minister of Russia, and Barack Hussein, Obama, President of the United States, are vying for world recognition and global influence. The difference between these two heads of state is strikingly dissimilar. It's not poles apart. For instance, this past April, Vladimir Putin, along with state photographers to Easter Sunday services in Moscow, joining over 4 million Russians in celebrating their nation's holiest day of the year. Following the service, Putin appeared on national television to congratulate the Russian people for celebrating the resurrection of Jesus Christ. By way of contrast, Barack Obama did no photo ops this past Easter Sunday, no speeches, no television appearances. But instead, the zionist puppet Obama brought a cadre of journalists and photographers to the third annual White House Passover Seder this past April, complete with a myriad of his.
All right, well, if it's going to echo, then I'm going to play it. Because it's... I'm so frustrated at this. There's no reason that it should be echoing. I've got echo cancellation on. I don't get it. I'm not echoing, am I? Fuck. Well, I'm not going to play it. All right, I'm going to try it again and see if it happens.
Great leaders attract great,
great
people.
Leaders attract
von
great people.
At the close of the 18th century, as we begin the 21st century, two leaders in the public eye, Vladimir Putin, Prime Minister of Russia, and Barack Hussein Obama, President of the United States, are vying for world recognition and global influence. The difference between these two heads of state is strikingly dissimilar, if not poles apart. Putin is a no-nonsense leader. And
and
leader.
He enjoys great popularity and acclaim
by the Russian people.
When a French journalist attempted to trap Putin into making an anti-Muslim statement because of his anti-terrorism actions in Chechnya, Putin suggested that the journalist come to Moscow for circumcision. And for those whose expertise is the interpretation of body language, a classic study is the 2009 breakfast meeting in Moscow between Obama and his host, Russian Prime Minister Vladimir Putin. Putin stares the U.S. President down. The intimidated Obama hunches over and nervously makes inconsequential small talk. Obviously, Mr. Putin is not interested. To sum it all up, in outlining the difference between Putin and Obama, Putin announced last year that the founding of Christianity in Russia in the 10th century would be a new national and public holiday for the Russian people to celebrate. At the same time, Obama announced last year that the month of May, traditionally known as the month America celebrates its war heroes on Memorial Day, would be known as Jewish American Heritage Month.
Thank you so much. I am proud to welcome you to the first ever event held at the White House to honor Jewish American Heritage Month.
One more step on the road of Jewry's usurping of America's time-honored traditions. The Jewification of America is now complete under the presidency and Jewish-dominated administration of Barack Obama. But in Putin's Russia, a vision to create a Christian society once again is well underway, with churches and monasteries proliferating throughout Russia, a ban on gay parades, the closing down of casinos, and the permanent cancellation of youth-corrupting television shows such as The Simpsons and South Park. If only we had a leader like Vladimir Putin in America, what a great country we could be once again.
Testing. All right. Can you guys hear me now? I do not know why there was an echo there. I did everything according to the book the way StreamYard said to do it, and there should be no freaking echo. And I'm fucking livid right now. I hate putting out shit quality. I hate it. I don't think you guys understand. I tend to be a perfectionist, so it's like it makes me angry. Anyway, coming back here to the article, I didn't know that about they banned The Simpsons in Russia. I didn't know that. That was interesting. Let's see. Unlike so many U.S. officials who, indoctrinated by the Council on Foreign Relations, place global interests above America's, Putin is a nationalist who looks out for his own citizens. While America continually adds trillions to its staggering debt, Putin has actively worked to eliminate debt. He paid off all his country owed to the IMF and Rothschild creditors from the Yeltsin years. Putin has signed into law a ban on ads for abortions, while calling for ending abortion altogether in Russia. Whereas Russia has prohibited genetically modified foods, I knew that, the United States even outlaws GMO labeling requirements, preventing our people from knowing what they're eating among the Russian people, who Putin enjoys unsurpassed popularity. All right, so instead of me playing this video from there, I'm going to try to play it from here and see what happens. Let me see here, actually. Let me know if you guys can hear this.
Подрался, наглотался какой-то мути. Он так меня достал, я его прогнала. И я хочу теперь такого, как Путин. Такого, как Путин, полного сил. Такого, как Путин, чтоб и не пил. Такого, как Путин, чтоб не обижал. Такого, как Путин, чтоб не убежал.
I'm not going to play that whole thing, but holy crap. Those chicks are singing like they want a man like Putin. Not going to hurt them. Her boyfriend got drunk and got high and she kicked him away. Now they want a man like Putin. That's freaking nuts. That's crazy. That's like 15 years ago. Wow, he's got rock star status over there. That's interesting. I mean, I knew Mike. You know, we kind of talked a little bit about this. And this really isn't meant to be a carryover from Tuesday with Mike, but I mean, it kind of is, and I didn't realize it. And I don't. A lot of times, I don't read these articles in advance because I want to be. My goal isn't to read them with like super clarity. My goal is to read them and have you guys see my honest reaction. That's kind of why I do what I do. So I want to be as surprised as you guys. Putin also makes refreshing sense in his foreign policy. Since the Zionist perpetrated 9/11, America has become the world's bully. Let me get back in. America has become the world's bully, destabilizing nation after nation in the Middle East in wars that were already planned in 2001 for the sake of creating the Luciferian Greater Israel. Those wars have in turn sent millions of refugees into Europe, ensnarling that continent in chaos. After the brutal deaths of Saddam Hussein and Muammar Gaddafi, the Zionists next envisioned Bashar al-Assad's bloody body being dragged through the streets of Damascus, and so the U.S. created ISIS forces struck Syria. Credibly, a number of Americans remain so brainwashed that they still think these wars are all about freedom and democracy, a slogan that should have been relegated to oblivion after Woodrow Wilson said fighting World War I would make the world safe for democracy. But Putin and had seen enough Middle East madness and put a halt to it, climaxed by the recent victory of the Syrian army in Aleppo. Perhaps most important is the spiritual dimension, which is the root of Russian transformation under Putin. I again turned to Brother Nathaniel. Now, I could not find this video. I looked everywhere, couldn't find it. The video is no longer valid. So I don't know which video he's referring to. There's not enough information. I did find a lot of stuff, but nothing that kind of fit that bill. Putin's faith is not new. Father Tikhon Shevkunov, a Russian Orthodox monk, very close to him, said that in 2001 that Putin really is an Orthodox Christian and not just nominally, but a person who makes confession, takes communion, and understands his responsibility before God for the high service entrusted to him for his immortal soul. In this two-minute clip, Putin criticizes Western countries for abandoning their own Christian roots and moral values, banishing Christian holidays and embracing political correctness, pedophilia, and globalism. How I wish to see an American president speak like this. Now, I'm not going to play that video from there. I'm going to go find the video and play it here. I actually re-recorded it, and instead of doing the video with the way that it was, I spoke Putin's words. I'm trying to find that video. Here it is. All right, here we go. Let me know if you guys hear this okay. I'm going to mute myself again to make sure that I don't... outside of Russia. They include foreign policy. A further challenge for the national Russian identity is to connect to the process we observe outside of Russia. They include foreign policy, moral, and other aspects. We see that many Euro-Atlantic states have taken the way where they deny or reject their own roots, including their Christian roots, which form the basis of Western civilization. In these countries, moral basis and any traditional identity are being denied. National, religious, cultural, and even gender identities are being denied or relativized. There, politics treats a family with many children as juridically equal to a homosexual partnership. Faith in God is equal to faith in Satan. The excesses and exaggerations of political correctness in these countries indeed leads to serious consideration for the legitimization of parties that promote the propaganda of pedophilia. The people in many European states are actually ashamed of their religious affiliations and are indeed frightened to speak about them. Christian holidays and celebrations are abolished or neutrally renamed as if one were ashamed of those Christian holidays. With this method, one hides away the deeper moral value of these celebrations. And these countries try to force this model onto other nations globally. I am deeply convinced that this is a direct way to the degradation and primitization of culture. This leads to deeper demographic and moral crisis in the West. What can be better evidence for the moral crisis of human society in the West than the loss of its reproductive function? And today, nearly all developed Western countries cannot survive reproductively, not even with the help of migrants. Without the moral values that are rooted in Christianity and other world religions, without rules and morals, values which have formed and been developed over millennia, people will inevitably lose their human dignity and become brutes. And we think it is right and natural to defend and preserve these Christian moral values. One has to respect the right of every minority to self-determination, but at the same time, there cannot and must not be any doubt about the rights of the majority. At the same time as this process plays out at a national level in the West, we observe on an international level the attempts to create a unipolar, unified model of world to relativize and remove institutions of international rights and national sovereignty. In such a unipolar, unified world, there is no place for sovereign states. Such a world needs merely vassals. From a history perspective, such a unipolar world would mean the surrender of one's own identity and of God-created diversity. a further this challenge for the national record. All right, so that was Putin giving a speech back in, when was that? I don't know exactly know when that was, but it wasn't probably about sometime in the last decade or so. But it's true. The Western civilizations have been abandoning their Christian roots for a long time, because if you look at what the Marxists have done, they got a hold of the universities, they got a hold of the government, they got a hold of the courts, and they've basically made it illegal, all under the quote unquote separation of church and state, which that wasn't even anything remotely close to what it was supposed to be. And they utilize that and make it so that we are going backwards and, destroying the family, destroying patriotism, and destroying the nuclear family or God, God in the country. Let's see here. Since the Soviet Union broke up in 1991, over 26,000 new churches have opened in Russia. Public schools have become so Christian that some parents have complained about it. In November 2016, accompanied by Patriarch Kirill, Putin dedicated a statue of Vladimir the Great, who Christianized Russia in 988 AD. And that video, I can find, I looked for it as well. For those who still harbor doubts about the authenticity of Putin's faith or the Russian revival and have time for a 14-minute video, I recommend watching this. Now, I'm probably going to play this at the very end. It's actually about a 20-minute video, because I found one that was just a little, it had everything that the 14-minute video did, but it had like an additional like 6-minute clip in there, and I thought it was better. So anyway, I'm going to be playing that at the end. Incredibly, at an evangelical church I used to attend, which was mentally incarcerated by Christian Zionism, the Bible teacher told us that today's Russia is the evil Gog and Magog mentioned in the Bible, and confided to us that his belief that Putin is the Antichrist. This individual was so bottled up in Hal Lindsey's warped theology and the Left Behind series that he was blinded to the obvious truths occurring in our world. While Obama was lighting up the White House in rainbow colors to celebrate gay marriage, this Bible teacher continued to proclaim how America is a Christian nation standing against evil Russia. Many American Christians pray that the world will experience a spiritual revival. What most of them don't know is revival is occurring now within Russia. As a veteran anti-communist from the late Cold War era and a bitter critic of the USSR, I never dreamed I'd see the day that America and Russia traded places. But it has progressively happened. Is Vladimir Putin the real deal? I believe he is. The corporate media continually demonizing him, most recently with total unproven claims that he hacked the 2016 election, greatly supports that. Some will say that Putin is only acting. If so, I say give us more such actors. The spirit of the Tsar and of Christ, which the Rothschild-backed Zionists thought they had forever destroyed in Russia, is rising from the ashes. Now, this video here is... it's about a 4-minute video and called the Russia and Christ. Let me see if I can. Let me do this.
Slowly
Okay, so it looks like it's just kind of a song, the Russia we've lost. I'm gonna play this video. I have it done a different way. So let me see if this works. I want you guys to let me know if it if you hear echo in this.
Ощущается какая-то особая атмосфера, или как церковные люди говорят, особая благодать. Я не знаю более светлого места. Чувствую себя свободно, раскованно. И может быть, это потому что место такое намоленное. В сторону от суеты. Каких-то мирских страстей есть возможность подумать не о текущих проблемах и вопросах, которых всегда очень много, а сосредоточиться на главном. Главное – это смысл нашего бытия. Обратиться к самому первоисточнику Господа и попросить его о милости для себя и для всех, кого мы любим. Попросить о милости для нашей страны, для нашего народа. И получить дополнительные силы для того, чтобы уверенно идти по жизни.
Хотел бы пожелать процветания вашей обители, а всем вам долгих лет жизни и крепкого-крепкого здоровья. Помогай, Господи. Христос воскрес.
С Рождеством вас. Праздник. Вы обычно отмечаете этот праздник в небольших храмах, сельских городах. А сегодня вот почему-то шли в северной столице Снегет. Почему вы отошли от традиции, почему именно в этом соборе?
Для меня это особый собор. Меня здесь крестили. Где-то месяца через полтора после рождения. Мы же здесь недалеко жили. Ну, собственно говоря.
А вы помните хотя бы какое-то вот воспоминание? У вас есть там крестили? Мама рассказывала.
Нет, ну что, конечно, нет. Мне было полтора месяца. Мама рассказывала, но тоже немного, совсем немного. Рассказывала, что когда вот они с соседкой меня принесли сюда крестить, отец у меня был членом КПСС, и причем таким последовательным и строгим человеком. Они это сделали как бы втайне от него. Ну, во всяком случае, считалось, что втайне. Вот когда принесли на крещение, то священник, который крестил, сказал, что вот сегодня день Архангела Михаила. И, кстати, говорит, и меня зовут тоже Михаилом. И если вы ребенку имя еще не дали, то могли бы назвать ее Михаилом. Но мама сказала, что вот мы уже зарегистрировали в честь отца, вот, Владимир. И тоже мама сказала, что он такой добрый был, мягкий. Батюшка говорит, ну и слава богу, и хорошо, это наше старинное русское имя. Показал икону здесь в храме князя Владимира, святого князя Владимира. Говорит, это будет ваша икона. Вот. А потом, уже гораздо позже, когда мои родители ушли из жизни, здесь отпевали маму сначала, а потом через год с небольшим и папу. Так что с этим храмом у меня многое связано.
Все-таки...
For the first time over 10 or 15 years, we have witnessed a very stable trend of growth of birth rates in our country, and even this year we'll have some growth of population. And one gender marriages will not give you offsprings. Therefore, we are very patient.
Сексуальным меньшинствам.
To the sexual minorities, but still we believe that the state should support
процессы, связанные с
the processes having to do with the birth rate, mother and child care, infancy, and take care of the health of those people.
Русская православная церковь во все времена и эпохи всегда была со своим народом, делила с ним все беды и все радости, поддерживала его и вдохновляла, скрепляла нравственный каркас общественной жизни, да и всей нашей национальной государственности. В основе всех побед и достижений России – патриотизм, вера и сила духа. Эти неотъемлемые свойства национального характера помогли нашему народу и в 1612 году, помогли преодолеть смуту, помогли победить в Великой Отечественной войне 1812 года, она тоже была великой для нашего народа, так же, как и война 1941-45 годов. Но мы должны помнить и другие страницы своей истории, в том числе извлекать уроки из драматических событий начала 20 века, когда во многом именно с размывания духовных и национальных основ, с настоящей травли Русской Православной Церкви и других наших традиционных конфессий, началось разрушение единого государства, единой страны, ее срыв в революции и потрясения, в братоубийственные конфликты и войны. Мы рассчитываем на продолжение многогранного партнерства, позитивного партнерства с Русской Православной Церковью. Будем всячески способствовать ее восстановлению. Будем вместе с вами работать в деле укрепления согласия в нашем обществе, в укреплении его нравственного стержня. Для нашего общества, для нашей страны национальное согласие, межрелигиозная гармония – это без всякого преувеличения вопрос исторического значения. Сегодня и в России, и в странах канонического присутствия Московского патриархата, среди наших соотечественников на разных континентах Русская Православная Церковь выполняет особую миссию. Она сближает государство и народы. Своим мудрым словом и делом помогает найти взаимопонимание. Помогает сохранить те нити, которые связывали нас веками. По сути, сплачивает многомиллионный русский мир. Но, к сожалению, тогда же были утрачены и многие нравственные ориентиры. Мы в известном смысле вместе с грязной водой и ребенка выплеснули. Сегодня это проявляется в равнодушии к общественным делам часто. В готовности мириться с коррупцией, с наглым стяжательством, с проявлениями экстремизма и оскорбительного поведения. И все это порой приобретает безобразные, агрессивные, вызывающие формы. Скажу больше, создают долгосрочные угрозы обществу безопасности, да и целостности России. Знаете, уважаемые коллеги, мне больно сегодня об этом говорить, но сказать я об этом обязан. Сегодня российское общество испытывает явный дефицит духовных скреп. Милосердие, сочувствие, сострадание друг к другу, поддержки и взаимопомощи. Дефицит того, что всегда, во все времена исторические, делало нас крепче, сильнее, чем мы всегда гордились. Мы должны всецело поддержать институты, которые являются носителями традиционных ценностей. Исторически доказали свою способность передавать их из поколения в поколение. Закон может защищать нравственность и должен это делать. Но нельзя законом установить нравственность. Попытки государства вторгаться в сферу убеждений и взглядов людей – это, безусловно, проявление тоталитаризма. Это для нас абсолютно неприемлемо. Мы и не собираемся идти по этому пути. Мы должны действовать не путем запретов и ограничений, а укреплять прочную духовно-нравственную основу общества. Именно поэтому определяющее значение приобретают вопросы общего образования, культуры, молодежной политики. Эти сферы – это не набор услуг, а прежде всего пространство для формирования нравственного, гармоничного человека, ответственного гражданина России.
Владимир Владимирович, Ваше Высокопреосвященство, Матушка Игуменья, дорогие отцы, братья и сестры, сегодня особое историческое событие. Оно имеет большое значение для жизни нашей Церкви, для жизни каждого верующего человека, для жизни страны. В Церковь возвращается чудотворный образ, особой силой Божией, прославленной в нашей истории. Я хотел бы предоставить слово избранному президенту Российской Федерации Владимиру Владимировичу Путину. Прошу вас, Владимир Владимирович.
Ваше Святейшество, дорогие друзья, Матушка Игуменья, государство передает сегодня первый список чудотворной иконы Иверской Божьей Матери. Эта святыня сопровождала наших предков на протяжении столетий и в мирных трудах, и в ратных походах, в том числе при освобождении Смоленска в середине 17 века от иностранных захватчиков. Сегодня день памяти святого Георгия Победоносца, символа Москвы. Мы находимся в преддверии Великой Победы и Великой Отечественной войне. Сегодня не лишним будет вспомнить, что без Русской Православной Церкви невозможно себе представить ни российской государственности, ни нашей культуры. Русская Православная Церковь, так же как и другие традиционные конфессии России, является хранительницей наших нравственных ценностей. Я с чувством радости передаю эту икону Русской Православной Церкви. Пусть она служит и помогает людям. С наступающим вас праздником!
Сердечно благодарю вас, Владимир Владимирович, за ваши добрые слова и за то, что икона, которая в истории практически никогда не покидала Новодевичьего монастыря, сразу же после того, как по повелению государя-императора Алексея Михайловича в далеком 17 веке она была написана на Афоне.
Спасибо.
Okay, so that was the long video that I found talking about Putin and the, you know, kind of like the sincerity of whether or not he's really Christian or if it's just like a scam. I don't know about y'all, but I kind of got the distinct impression that that was not a scam. Didn't look like a scam to me. And you look at the things that are happening in Russia, and that's, it's kind of hard to deny, you know, a lot of things that are going on over there. I did find the, let's see here, where is it? I did find this very interesting. It was a picture of the that Russian poster. And, you know, I don't know if any of you guys like kind of understand this. And it's like an English translated version. So for United Russia, it has the white horse with the guy flying the Russian flag, the traditional Russian flag, coming over. Looks like I don't know if that's the Kremlin or if it's or if it's just a I don't know what it is, but this red dragon has, you know, taken up residence down there, and the white horse, the guy on the white horse, is coming to slay the red dragon. And it says, chick serping ring of Bolshevism has squeezed the heart of Russia. It seems that the victim could not break free. Well, this is hard to read. Suddenly the, in the light of the rising sun came a horseman, freeing, gaming the hard task of saving Russia. His strong arm is, tied to, can't make that out. And the helpless serpent knows that the end is near, that he cannot escape, and the, that, but something shall be done. Maybe justice, justice shall be done. So that's hard to read. That's not easy to read, but that's an interesting poster. You know, and you know, from all accounts, it appears like Putin is the guy for the job. And, you know, I mean, and I'll tell you what, I got to say, I'm on Team Putin at this point. I am on Team Putin at this point. And I truly believe that he and Trump are, you know, tied together. I think they're working hand in hand. So not very many people can, you know, coax me out of that belief. So, but anyway, all right, well, I'm about an hour and 15 minutes, which was a little bit longer than I thought this was going to take. Had those, the hiccups with the sound system. So, I'm going to go ahead and kill it for tonight, and then I'll come back tomorrow and I'll do part two where I go over, and I'll probably find a little bit more material for it as well. But the communist escapees warning America that is it's becoming an authoritarian nation. So, anyway, hope everybody has a wonderful evening, and I look forward to seeing you guys all tomorrow. Oh, and one other quick note, guys. I could not get the Friday Night Watch Parties to stay up on Rumble. The Rumble is censoring that. So I have created I've created an Odyssey channel. And I am now uploading every show that I do to Odyssey as well. And I'm putting up I'll be putting the Friday Night Watch Parties there as well. I still can't put, like, I'll probably, if I ever play anything that is copywritten or copyrighted, I don't know the proper term there, but like a movie or something, I will pull it down from Odyssey as well, because I mean, they still, you can't put trademarked or copywritten stuff up there. So, so I will be pulling those things down if I do do a watch party, and I'm going to try to, you know, let everybody know in advance that, hey, this isn't going to stay up. But for some of these videos that I've put up that have been pulled down, they will stay up on Odyssey. Odyssey is, I really have become very fond of Odyssey. It's a solid platform, and it's very free speech. And there's an app for it on the for your phone, for in the iPhone iStore, or in the Apple Store, and then in the Google Store as well. So. Not as, you know, it's nothing like Rumble or YouTube, but, you know, hey, it's better than BitChute not having one. So, and BitChute actually is kind of stepping up their game a little bit. I've noticed they're doing some better stuff over there. So, but anyway, just FYI, I did create a YouTube or an Odyssey channel for all of the stuff, and I'll put some links in the description. So, again, hope you guys have a wonderful evening, and I will see y'all mañana.